You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you're going to have a good day on this hump day. Hump day Wednesday, December 1st. And hope you're going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must be done, and you will get it done. That's right. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. You click on that, and the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Also, you can do the shortcut. That's right, babaoshi.net. BABAOSHI.net. And there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for Awakening Media on Mondays from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kambahn and Nataki Kambahn. Followed by from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9, the Black Farmers Report. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, brothers and sisters, you know when it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then once again on Sunday at 7 p.m., time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American African owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. That's right, brothers and sisters. This is that time of year that we need to be supporting ourselves. So if you're all this gift getting and gift giving and so forth, remember to do business with American African businesses. Brother Bamani Tahima just returned from Tanzania. I talked to him. He's going to be my guest next week Friday. And he'll talk to you about the travels and all what's coming up and how you can access a trip of a lifetime. His next trip is December 24th to January 5th, 2022. To Ghana, then April 1st to April 11th to Senegal, and then May 24th to June 5th, 2022 to Ghana, and then November 17th to the 28th to Tanzania. At this time, the trip is $3,800, double occupancy. Very affordable. Very affordable. Brothers and sisters, if you want to give Brother Bamani a call, give him a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, he'll have those, the latest pictures of the trip. He took 15 people with him to Tanzania. And the latest trip, those pictures will be up next week, early next week. Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Excuse me. Habashaw. Habashaw Incorporated. Habashaw has a a repatriation initiative. It's an 18-month step-by-step program to help you to repatriate back to the motherland. You know, they have a program in Ghana, but it's not just necessarily to Ghana. You can repatriate to many other places. You can Kenya, East Africa, West Africa, South Africa, Central Africa. Hell, if you want to, North Africa. I don't know about that, huh? Habesha Incorporated, of course, Habesha stands for helping African by establishing schools at home and abroad. They have the Kashi Project, their programs, Kashi Project, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. And, of course, the Kashi Project is in Ghana, and there are pictures of the buildings that are up, the things that are happening. So check out HabeshaIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group. Ledge stands for the Environmental Development for, excuse me, Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. Ledge was formed to continue in the tradition of Malcolm X and Marcus Garvey and many others to bridge the social, economic, and physical divide between Africans all over the world. Africa is in the diaspora, sits in strong economics. They have strong economies with capital, but no resources. The continent Africans maintain resources, but no capital. This produces a lose-lose economic situation for both groups. African resources are taken, refined, and sold to us in the diaspora. The fortunes earned on both sides don't benefit either of us. The Ledge Group bridges this gap. They produce projects, models, and partnerships to enrich both groups at once and to change this dynamic forever. We do not have the audacity to think small. Ashe. You know, they have the areas of human existence. They deal with food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects in 6 different countries with over 170 employed and over 260 members. And remember, as a member, if you're a member of the Ledge Group, you can buy land in Tanzania, $250 an acre. The Ledge Group. Check them out. Abibiatumi, A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I, abibiatumi.com. Brothers and sisters, go to that. Make it a favorite. Abibiatumi.com, Abibiatumi TV, Abibiatumi. They just got it. Telling you, check it out. Abibiatumi. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta on Ralph David Abernathy, right across the street from Soul Vegetarian, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, you know, and the Shrine has a whole kind of, they have all kind of stuff at the Shrine. They have books, they have clothing, they have furniture, they have jewelry, they have all kind of stuff. So check out the Shrine. Once again, supporting our businesses. Also, too, the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Give Mama Nia a call. If you're looking for a book, she has postcards, greeting cards, gift certificates, T-shirts, figurines. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. I apologize. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. The Black Dot Cultural Center in Lithonia, Brother Gazende Ajamu, in his coffee place. He has a coffee bar, and he has books, T-shirts, greeting cards, all kinds of good stuff. The red, black, and green shoes and Hasgas shoes, and I know that the Shrine has them as well. And also, too, my brother, who is Afroletics, he has a business in the new Black Wall Street Market, located in Stonecrest. And my good brother, Sajid Foe, he has his business, Timbuktu, with jewelry, and also has another business with a partner with artwork. And my good brother, Michael McKee Jr., has a CBD business. So I'm just trying to make sure that you are aware of all the possibilities for you, that you ain't got to go nowhere else but spend money with us. But if you're in the Macon, Georgia area, you're in that area, go to Homeland Village Cultural Gift Shop, and they have all kinds of good products. Incense, oils, healthcare, product, beauty products, jewelry, literature, DVDs, CDs, furniture. Man, I'm telling you. And they even have a vegan restaurant. That's right, 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia. And give Brother Abijah a call at 478 256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. Homeland Village. Us Lifting Us there tomorrow. Tomorrow night, their Thursday night broadcast of Us Lifting Us. Us Lifting Us is on blogtalkradio.com. blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Us Lifting Us from 9 to 10 on Thursdays. If you want to call to listen, you can do that. If you want to call to make questions, comments, or concerns, dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. That's Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa. Ackman Institute, Baba Baruti and Mama Yah, doing a great job of educating our young warriors. Deserve to be supported. Let me, I'm missing something. I said, I knew I was out of, let me get back to Ackman. Sun God Essential, one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. Inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. That's Sun God Essential, one-stop natural shop. Give our sister Shelly Amundsen a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun God Essence, your one-stop natural shop. Also, my good sister, Sister Gabby Aurelia. Sister Gabby and doing excellent work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Go to sanjay-haiti.org to check out the great things that she's doing with the children, with the education, health care, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship. That's Sanjay, sonjay-haiti.org. sonjay-haiti.org. Yes. And so, Baba Baruti and Mama Yah, I tell you, they're beautiful people, man. It's a beautiful couple and strong. So check them out at Ackman Institute, P.O. Box 10786. Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But if you want to use PayPal and Cash App, please do so. And Cash App, for instance, is a dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. Okay. Also, too, the books that Baba Baruti has is Ackman House, AckmanHouse.com. That's AckmanHouse.com. All right. So, the Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought, the Inye Sesim. I have a guest this morning, Sister Tamara Johnson Sheely. She's running for the U.S. Senate. And so I'm awaiting her. She doesn't have that much time to spend with us, so we're definitely trying to make sure that we have enough time that that she can to give. And we do the best that we can to disseminate the information about her campaign when the primary is coming up and the elections. I know, you know, next year is a big election year. It's the midterm elections, 2022. And there's going to be some changes, you know. Hats off to Brother Andre. He won the primary yesterday against the established Miss Moore, who was council president. You know, but Andre Dickens more than likely may become the new mayor of the city of Atlanta. November 30th, the creator, Ra, lives by Ma'at and has established creation on Ma'at. Who is Ma'at? Ma'at represents the very order which constitutes creation. Therefore, it is said that Ra created the universe by putting Ma'at in place of chaos. So creation in itself is Ma'at. Creation without order is chaos. Ma'at is profound teaching in reference to the nature of creation and the manner in which human conduct should be cultivated. It represents a deep understanding of divinity and the manner in which virtuous qualities can be developed in human heart
so as to come closer to the divine. Matua Ashby. We call on divinity with all the righteous warrior ancestors leading us to safely bring us home. We call on the courage manifest within them through a heartfelt and uncompromising effort to find and know the way to guide our thoughts, words, and deeds without ambiguity or tremendity toward sovereignty of our people. We call on the love of all those who have created a sound path for us through doing this throughout our existence as a people, especially during the Ma'afa, during this Ma'afa. We ask forgiveness for our moral weaknesses and any errors in judgment which has led us to become distracted from our promise to be African. As we do this work, we seek your guidance and assistance in finding more ways to improve the quality of the character of our warriorship so that we can better be and serve Ma'at. Ashe. Amun Ra Ma'at. Affirm, I am a microcosm. Excuse me, family. I am a microcosm of Ma'at. I am divine. Affirm, I am a microcosm of a Ma'at. I am divine. December 1st. You cannot make yourself whole again by brooding 100% of the time on the darkness of the world. We are the light of the world. Dr. Ivan von Sertima. Beyond Urugu, attempting to rewrite our truth so that the enslavement and the colonization of African people never happened, is the socialized nature of the mentecidal, especially true Negroes. Their lives are so self-hatingly empty and full of despair in terms of wanting to be seen, having to have some kind of royalty, with a chronic desire to have a glowing history in order to compete with beings that are nothing to compete with, that they are driven to find something African to disturb or disrupt and destroy in service to their pale deities. Many even carry our colors with fists high, spend every waking moment incessantly searching to convince their intellectually battered following that anything African which will teach us what actually brought us to this nirur in our history, anything which will guide us so that we can better do the mindful work of moving toward sovereignty in the real world, is imaginary to them. Affirm, I am shining and doing it brightly. Affirm, I am shining and doing it brightly. Brothers and sisters, the Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. I tell you, I love Baba Barudi and Mama Yah for what they have done and what they continue to do, and all the things that they do. They're beautiful people. They're just fantastic. As we wait on our guests, brothers and sisters, this beautiful sister, she's Tamara Johnson Shealy. She's ran for political office many times, but I'll let her, you know, make those introductions, and we'll talk about some. You know, unfortunately, our conversation will be, you know, not in a great length, but hope we get a lot out of it. I know one of the things that she is pushing and promoting is the establishment of or dealing with reparations. And that's interesting. That's interesting. But she has a good social platform, economic development and social environmental platform. Oh, no, not. You know, that's what's interesting about the politics of this society. And that's why I hate this damn society so much. I really do, brothers and sisters. I see no hope at all for us when you consider they can't pass a damn anti-lynching bill They can't even do that. They can't even pass an anti-lynching bill. They can't pass the John Lewis voting rights bill. just who they are. Well, my guest is here. Good morning. Good morning, Miss.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing good, sir. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for this bit of time. I know you're very busy. You're running a campaign for the U.S. Senate, the Senate seat that is now occupied by Reverend Warnock. And, you know, it's going to be a challenge for you.
I don't think so.
Okay, good. I like that attitude.
You speak that, but I don't think so
okay.
at all. I think
well, good.
This is our time.
Well, I believe so, too. And the kind of platform that you have, Ms. Johnson-Shealy, is very progressive. It is very progressive. I love it, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. I love it. You know, dealing with the reparations issue, you know, minimum wage issue, medical care, public education, climate, the creation of a climate change, job creation, criminal justice reform. You know, you have a very good and very progressive platform, you know. And to me, if I'm a person who wants progress, because see, that's why it has baffled me about the Republicans, about being conservative. I understand them. But I'm talking about the Negroes that are in the Republican Party. That's what I'm talking about, wanting to be conservative. Damn, don't you understand the meaning of the word? The meaning of the word is to conserve, just as is, keep as is. You want to keep this damn society as is? You don't want to progress? You don't want things to be better? You don't want to challenge things that have been so ugly and so mean and so, you know, anti-spirited that you don't want to challenge that to make things better? That's sad. But see, that's what your platform is, you know. That's what your platform is. I'm very impressed. So tell us about yourself, my sister.
Thank you. So I just want to say, first of all, thank you for giving me an opportunity to grace your platform and give voice to my candidacy. So for those of you who don't know who I am, my name is Tamara Johnson-Shealy. I am, again, a candidate for the United States Senate here in Georgia. And I always say this, that this is not my first run, not my second run, not my third run. This is not my fourth run. This is my fifth consecutive run for office. So I came out of the gate in 2014, no name candidate, no money, nobody know who I was. But I came out of the gate and ran against a staunch Republican right here in the state of Georgia, Senate District 40. Senate District 40 includes all of North DeKalb, a little bit of Fulton, and a little bit of Gwinnett County, so those three counties. And came out of the gate against this staunch Republican, and Republicans couldn't get more than 20-some-odd percent against this man. I got 37% out the gate.
I'll say.
God put it in my spirit. Run again.
Mm-hmm.
2016, ran against this man, got 43.8%. God put it in my spirit. Run again. I ran again in 2018 knowing that this was going to be a win. I had gotten these, you know, I needed 7% more. This is going to be a win in 2018. And that's when I saw the hand of my own party. I do run as a Democrat. And my own party, operatives inside of the party, primaried me with a white woman because the district is, quote-unquote, predominantly white, quote-unquote, predominantly affluent. They primaried me with a white woman because they felt like she was more electable. She looks like the district. Now, after I had nurtured this district for three consecutive election cycles, I'm not good enough. I've been black all my life, but now I'm the black candidate. So nevertheless, I'm primaried in 2018, and she wins. Her name is Sally Harrell. She now held on. She held on to Stacey Abrams' coattail in 2018 because she ran for governor. And now she sits in the Georgia State Senate 40 off of my work. But God had another plan. I was angry and rightfully so. God cooled me off. He told me to go back to school. So I went and I got accepted to Emory Law School. Got my Juris Master's degree in 2020, but God put it back in my spirit to run. And I ran in the special election to replace Kelly Loeffler. And if y'all remember that, 2020, get rid of Donald Trump, get rid of Kelly Loeffler. That was the mantra, right?
That's right.
I'm in this race. Yep. Get rid of these two. And I'm in this race, 21 candidates. It was a special election. 21 candidates. I came in sixth place out of 21 candidates. The five ahead of us was, of course, Warnock and Loeffler. Then there was Doug Collins, who used to be a congressman out of the state of Georgia here. Then there was Deborah Jackson, who used to be a mayor here in the state of Georgia. And then there was Matt Lieberman, whose daddy was a congressman. His daddy was a U.S. senator out of the state of Connecticut. The five ahead of me had millions and or influence, right? Mm-hmm. We came in sixth place talking black to black folks.
Right on.
So my campaign, my candidacy is very different because I have centered reparations. It is at the top of my agenda. We have to be very intentional about the repair and the redress for black America. So here we are, 2022. That was a special election to conclude Isaacson's term. That's why Kelly Loeffler was there, because Isaacson had gotten sick.
Mm-hmm.
So this Warnock has to run again in 2022 before it becomes a six-year term. So I'm primarying him. Bottom mm-hmm. line,
right?
I'm back in the saddle, and this is where I push the envelope, because we can't send somebody to Washington that's not specific about our issues as a people. In 2014, 16, and 18, I did talk about race, racism, and race relations, and that was probably part of it. They saw that, you know, they heard me, but then when they saw that this girl really is about to win, they don't want to talk about black issues,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So we can't send somebody to Washington that's not that who stands in the pulpit of Dr. King and not willing to talk about us specifically. When the Asians can get a hate bill passed mm-hmm. at the top of the, you know, at the very beginning of Biden being elected, and, you know, Warnock and Ossoff, when that happens, and then we're still not being talked about specifically, mm-hmm. there's a problem.
I agree.
So again, I have centered reparations, and I'm a reparationist, and it is for those of us who are descendants of chattel slavery. There we are. My goal is to create the Reparations Administration, and that is akin to the Social Security Administration, the same way we have the VA administration, the mm-hmm. same way we have these federal agencies that specifically address certain people. We need a federal agency that will specifically address our needs as a people. It took 400 years for us to get here. It might take 800 years for them to get it right. So we need a federal agency that will specifically address us. And I do talk about cutting the check, but we also need other resources as well to begin the process of repair for those of us who are descendants of chattel slavery in this country.
I agree. Although I'm more in favor of reparations globally, because, you know, Europeans have benefited tremendously from Africa and Africans, whether it's here, whether it's in the Caribbean, South America, Central America, and of course on the continent. You know, Europe became rich off the resources and the work and the sweat of our people, you know. And so I look at challenging Europeans globally on the issue of reparations. But I understand where you're coming from locally or nationwide in the United States, because it was through our captivity and our enslavement that this place has become rich. You know, that cotton was king. And so not only did it benefit the South, but it benefited the North, particularly the Northeast, which had the places where all those cotton went to develop textiles and so forth. So I agree with you, you know, and we must make it plain to our people. Now, I know there are some of us who say that they, and I agree that there are some of us who have been in poverty for generations, and some help should be afforded. But I look at, because you just mentioned repair. You mentioned the word repair. We must be repaired. And so to me, that money should be about repairing our psyche, repairing us mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. You know, and that's through an educational process that we control. you know. So the money for reparations, and then, of course, for job training and job development and businesses so we can compete, you know. So the so it's not just somebody getting a check. You know, I don't know if you heard this. This was a Caucasian who's a columnist, editorial columnist, Charles Kuttheimer. And he wrote an article way back in the 70s. I read it and never forgot it, you know, that he said, give them reparations. We've gave them welfare. We gave them affirmative action. Give them reparations. Say like $20,000 an individual and $40,000 a family, whatever. You know, give them reparations because of the mind that they have. We'll get it back within a year.
Let me push back on that.
Okay, I hear you.
I got a lot of pushback on that. No, sir, that is not who we are as a people. We know how to make a dollar out of 15 cents. And, you know, the narrative that is created about us, that's not truly who we are. We take our money and we make sure that, you know, we got to have a place to live. We pay our bills. That stimulus money came. People had to catch up.
Right.
You know,
but
we
see,
know what to do.
That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. It would be just like a stimulus package. It won't be the repair that is necessary for us to have the dignity and respect that we should have. It'll just be us buying some cars, buying some clothes.
No.
All right.
I'm not gonna let you perpetuate the narrative. No. That is not who
that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. That's what was said in that article years ago. But although when you look but when you look at, you know, when money comes into our community, the fact that it doesn't circulate as it should. It doesn't circulate many times before, particularly since a lot of businesses that we've had have been destroyed, you know. So we look to buy. Who can I buy from? So go ahead, my sister. Go ahead.
Yeah, but you're right. We don't have the businesses to – we don't have a dry cleaners. You know, we don't – they own the dry cleaners, the gas stations. No, so our dollar is not circulating within our communities because we don't have the infrastructure for it to circulate. So that – but that doesn't mean that we're not spending our money, you know, responsibly. I don't buy that narrative about who they say we are. Again, black people, we've had to make a dollar out of 15 cents. You know, and other communities have been given reparations. You know, America has paid reparations before, so that's not even the argument. And we have to have to remember, you know, this is a debt owed. This is a debt owed. This is for, you know, what was done to us during, of course, Jim Crow. But let's take this thing all the way back to slavery. Mm-hmm. You know, we came out, we were the property that fueled this nation. we built this off our blood, sweat, and tears. You know, we built this. That free labor built this country. This is a debt that is old. So I do believe that we're going to get the check cut. They're going to have to cut the check. The same way they've cut the check for other communities, you're going to have to cut the check for us. And we can decide how we want to spend it. Yeah, I do want 40 acres and a mule. My mule will be a tractor because I do want a farm. I'm a country girl.
Are you? Well, that's
so
beautiful.
I do want a farm.
Yeah.
But that may not be what everybody wants. You know, we're in the information age. You know, some people see opportunities in other spaces. I want land and I want a farm, but that's not what everybody wants to do. And however they decide to spend that money, that, you know, that is their decision. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm not going to let them tell us, you know, how we spend our money and who we are as a people. No. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to say this. I know that at this very moment, even though John Conyers has been putting forth H.R. 40 for over 30-something years, and I believe Sheila Jackson Lee took up where he left off since he left Congress, and really it hasn't gone anywhere. It hasn't been dealt with. It hasn't been dealt with within committee, and it definitely hasn't been dealt with in Congress nor in the Senate. You know, and for some of us, excuse me, I'm sorry, but for some of us, we think that we don't want to talk about reparations many elected officials don't want to talk about reparations. It's too divisive, you know, so they don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, and talking about black people and black issues is mm-hmm. is taboo. Like you don't do that in political spaces. Like you just don't do that. So, but I push back on that, and I bring it up when they won't. When they don't talk about us, I bring us up. I put us in the conversation.
Well, that's the courage that our elected officials, all of them, should have. In fact, mm-hmm. our caucus, whether it's on a local level, state level, or national level, should all be uniformed in that position, you know, to speak, you know, our special troops, to make sure that the issues that are affecting our people and to look at all the things that have been affecting us so adversely. In fact, and when you look at social ills in this society, they're more profound in us than in anybody else. When you look at health care, education, housing, jobs, and so forth, you know, we're at the lower end of the so-called economic ladder.
Mm-hmm. You know? For all skin folks and kin folks.
Yeah, yeah, that's
and
true.
Some of these people, you know, when they go to get in these elected positions, they're protecting themselves, mm-hmm. you know, and we got to be mindful of who we put in these positions. We just have to be mindful that we need people that are willing to fight for us.
Well, the thing is that we haven't held them accountable. You have people who have been in elected positions for decades, you know, for decades, and you or even families in generations. And yet, you know, they just become figureheads. They just become somebody that attends social functions, you know, to be glorified because they're not effective. They're not really challenging the system and pushing forth legislation that are going to, you know, fundamentally change our situation. It's not happening.
Yeah. And then you have to look at it too. These people that are, you know, running a campaign, I can just tell you, it's hard work. It's mm-hmm. a tremendous amount of work, and it's a lot of hard work. And it takes a lot of money to do it. And these people take money from PACs and persons that, you know, when they get to Congress or when they get in these positions, they owe that back.
Yeah.
So if you want to get candidates that are going to speak, if we're going to have candidates that's going to speak specifically to our issues, we got to make sure that they have what they need. And grassroots campaigning is hard work. And I know because I don't have big donors. I have regular people that contribute to me. And every dollar adds up, and it helps. But we have to put some muscle behind it if we want to have our voices heard, because that's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
I didn't invent this game. I'm just
right.
playing it.
I hear you. And you should be supported for the courage that you're displaying, because when you look at the Senate and Congress, they stay in those positions, once again, for decades, and they become rich. You have like a mansion in West Virginia. He's been in there a long time, and yet West Virginia is still poor. The state is still poor, but he has become very rich. Same thing with Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. Mitch McConnell, Kentucky is one of the poorest states in the United States, but Mitch McConnell has become rich, millionaires. They are millionaires, you know? And yet the people that they're supposed to serve, their condition is the same as it was when they first got elected. And yet they continue to put them back into office on the promise that it's going to get better. And there are some things within those particular states, particularly like West Virginia, that are not coming back. You can't revive the coal industry with the environmental issues that are affecting this country and the world, you know? So, I mean, I applaud you, my sister. I really do. You know, I support your candidacy because, you know, in fact, what I like to do is, you know, I know our time is almost up because I know you got to run, but to come back and we try to see if we can get you an audience and get some callers from the state of Georgia, you know, to they can hear you. and understand your candidacy and how you advocate on behalf of us. And we need people. Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the things that kind of turned me off from Raphael Warnock was one of the things, first thing he got in, we said his support for Israel, you know, because there were some issues about Israel to be boycotted because how Israel has treated the people within Israel and what the things that Israel has done outside and in other places around the world. Israel has acted like a bully, but of course they can because they have the benefit of Europe and the United States. They have that support, you know, so they can act like a bully. When they talked about eliminating people from Africa who are in Israel to kicking them out of the country, nothing was said. I don't know if the Congressional Black Caucus said anything. Probably not, because they get a lot of support from Israel. But I do know when Tlaib from Michigan and El Omar from Minnesota said something, you know, they got castigated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
you know, yeah,
you hitting it. I mean, you nailing it.
Yeah. Well, it's
money talks.
Yeah.
Money talks, power, influence.
Yeah.
All of that.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, when will the politicians who advocate on behalf have the integrity and then we have the will and the strength to support them, stand up to whoever to deal with these issues, you know? Because sometimes mm-hmm. it seems like when the politician gets in, he or she just does the bidding for whoever they want to get money from.
Mm-hmm.
And the constituency mm-hmm. that he left or she left back in the home state, you know, they're not considered until election time rolls around again, you know? And that's when they become visible at the church and become visible at the other, you know, and they probably don't even have town hall meetings
because mm-hmm.
they don't want to be questioned, you know? They don't want to be, you know, somebody have to confront them with the issues that they're not dealing with, you know, when, of course, that society and that district needs so much. But like I said, you know, you have some people who have been in political office for decades. And of course, you know, I don't know what the senators get paid, but I know that the congresspersons get paid, what, like $170,000 a year?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
That's pretty decent. That's mm-hmm. real decent. And the fact is, you don't have, if I have popularity, And I ran for a congressional position, I don't even have to have a high school diploma.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even have to have a high school diploma, but I have popularity. I have ideas. I have this, that, and the other. I get these people to vote for me. I get in office and then I'm there. And the only thing I'm about is making sure I stay there. You know, mm-hmm. I'm gregarious. I'm all over the place. I'm here. I'm now dealing with these pharmaceutical companies. I'm dealing with the National Rifle Association. I'm dealing with the American this, that, or the other, the alcohol. I'm dealing with it all, and I'm their boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then when it comes time for elections, I got money. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been their boy. I got money. And I got some staff. I got some manpower so I can stay in office.
mm-hmm.
You know, I know you're running as a Democrat, but I've often said, and I will continue to say, we should not be Democrat. We should not be Republican. We should be independent, you know, and mm-hmm. would have a firm, solid platform and with things that I know that will help us in our communities. With those things I mentioned before of housing, healthcare, jobs, education, and so forth. And if you agree with these things, then, you know, we're going to support you. But if you don't, you know. So we run candidates that and you have that kind of platform. I'm looking at your website You know,
yeah. I'm there, brother. I'm there.
Yeah, you are. You are.
I am. And here's where I, you know, I run as a Democrat because that's where our people live.
Right.
They will not hear me in any other capacity. This is a two-party system, and they're not going to hear me. Black people are not going to hear me in any other capacity. And I call myself an independent Democrat. You know, I'm very much so independent in my thinking. But, you know, and I just think because this is a, you know, like, a two-party system, we got to have people on both sides of the aisle. It would be great to have some black Republicans that would talk black to black folks. Like, I feel like I talk black to black people on this side of the aisle. I think we need to, you know, be much more strategic. When I didn't win in 2018 after being primaried, I told you I was mad and rightfully so. I started an initiative called Withhold the Vote. And withhold the vote is a withholding is a legal tactic. Like, I'm going to give you something, and I'm going to withhold this until we can agree on what this is. Withhold is a is a negotiation tactic. And withhold the vote was not about not voting. That's kind of caught a lot of flack from people because they're like, you're telling people not to vote. No, I'm not telling people not to vote. I'm telling people to be intentional about who they give their vote to and get something back for it.
Make sure that it's make sure they're accountable. We're withholding it to make sure you and us. You ain't just saying you're just not saying stuff to us to get our vote. We want accountability.
Yes.
Withhold the vote.
Yeah. And it's an exchange. Voting is an exchange. You get something. I'm giving you this for that. The same way you spend your money at a store, you're getting something in exchange. That's the power we have is the money in our pocket and the vote. And it is an exchange. So, you know, I just encourage our people to go to the polls and take your emotions out of it. Don't go to the polls and vote for somebody because they're Democrat. Don't go to the polls and vote for somebody because they're black. Don't go to the polls and vote for somebody because they're a man or a woman. Don't do that. Look at where these people actually stand on the issues, and does this benefit you and your family, and does it move our people forward? Like, be intentional about why we're voting. And I think if we could do that as a people, I think that we could really, you know, we could really make a dent in what's happening politically. I think this is a shortcoming of ours that we just go to the polls and we vote with our emotions instead of voting strategically.
Well, to me, and I will announce on my program periodically that TamaraForGeorgia.com to go to Tamara.
Thank you.
I told you, you know, I don't know you, and I just met you, you know, through our dear friend, Sister Marcia, and believe me, I really was impressed, and what you're coming from, and I know you know, you're going to make a serious noise, even if you may not win the primary. You're going to make a serious noise.
We're not speaking that, brother. We're going to win the primary.
I hear you. I know that.
I know the
mindset. You just put it positively out there, and it's going to happen. We're going to win. But, I mean, I deal in reality, too, because as progressive as you are, and the fact that there's a majority in this country that don't like progressiveness. They like conservatism. You know, they have all kinds of words and key phrases. You know, it's sad. It is, to me, sad.
I try not to get us too caught up in the words and the words people, you know. I've been touted, honestly, as a conservative Democrat, too. Like, I have some conservative values. So I like being somewhere in the middle. I don't fall far. I don't fall all the way to the left, and I don't fall all the way to the right. But I lean more Democratic again because that is where my people are.
Right.
And I'm not going to leave them on this Democratic plantation. I'm not going to leave them there. I'm going to, if I ain't free, you know, we ain't free.
That's
we
right.
all have to be free.
That's right. That's right. Well, I know we're at the top of the hour for you, and I understand that you have to go. I really appreciate it. I'm going to be announcing this, and the next time, you know, when we can do this again, we're going to go over your platform, the economic justice, environmental justice, things that you have said and how you want to do it, and just give you as much time as you can, you know, that I can in support of your candidacy. Okay.
Yeah. And I appreciate it. And I just want your audience to know that I am not just a senator in Georgia. I won't be just a senator in Georgia. I will be your U.S. senator, because a vote in Congress is a vote nationally. So I think people need to recognize that just because these Congress people, House and Senate, just because they're not in their state, they represent you, because that is a vote nationally, and it affects all of us equally. So,
Thank you. Thank you. As brothers and sisters, we've been talking with Sister Tamara Johnson Shealy. She is running for the U.S. Senate, and we're going to keep track of it, and we'll invite her back real soon. You have a blessed you have a blessed and wonderful day, my sister. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Solo.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was Ramsey Lewis and Earth, Wind, and Fire, Sun Goddess. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Ataki Kamban. That's from 8 to 9 on Mondays, followed by, from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesdays, it's the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. Friday from 8 until you have Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I haven't played this piece. I'm going to play, you know, it's open. If you want to give me a call, please do at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Talk about what the sister was talking about, who's running for U.S. Senate, just like she says. If she makes the Senate or when you're in Congress, you're voting on issues that are affecting people nationwide, not just your particular district, you know, or your state. So, but we haven't played this in quite a while, and has a program that believes in independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. And the only place that we can achieve those particular objectives is on the continent. And the reason why I want to play this is because I saw this piece where the Chinese have put their name on that airport in Uganda, in Tebbe, put their name on it, International Chinese Airport. You know, and for me, I can understand why many of the Negroes here in America who love America and believe that America does nothing like it and no place else they want to be. This is home. This is who they are. You know, they could care less what happens to African people anywhere on the continent or in any place else on the diaspora, in the diaspora. Could care less because I'm in America. I got mine. I have a great job. I live in a beautiful home in a nice area, a nice subdivision or, you know, cul-de-sac or whatever, you know. The schools that my kids go to are just phenomenal. They have access to all of the good stuff, just like all the other Caucasians. In fact, they're going to get accepted by some of the top schools in the country. This is just great. I got mine. If you didn't get yours, too bad, because it's there to get. This is America. You know, America espouses and promotes individualism. So therefore, those who are saying that can say that with conviction. They can say that just with all the heart they want. I'm an American because it promotes individualism. And the religion of America is Christianity. I know America doesn't have a official religion. In fact, America says it promotes no set of religion. Some people beg to differ. But there is other religions here, no doubt. And you see some of those religions are challenged. But America primarily is a so-called Christian nation. And Christianity promotes and perpetuates individualism. In fact, you see where Christianity is. It hasn't helped those people at all on the continent, other parts of the world. Yes, it might save their soul. You know. But their earthly existence leaves something to be desired. So when I saw that, we haven't played this in a while, but once again, this is from the Pan-African Federalist Movement, an organization that deserves to be supported. I'm going to play a few other things since we have time. They'll be interesting. Brothers and sisters, this is from the Pan-African Federalist Movement.
There is a lot of talk of late on the African continent about the fact that Africans are awaking. There is a lot of talk about the fact that we are woke. But the question that I'd like to ask you is, almost 100 years ago, a man called Marcus Garvey rose and told Africans that they must unite. Unite in their control of resources. Unite as nations. Unite their imaginations, their dreams, aspirations, and capabilities to grow in Africa and a race that will be able to self-determine and compete against other races. A man called Kwame Nkrumah came and said the same message. And another by the name of Malcolm X said the same. But the question is, after almost a century since the rise of Marcus Garvey, has Africa achieved unity? Do we control our resources? Do we unite in our... aspirations, dreams, and have we elevated Africa into a continent and a race that can compete and self-determine against other races? The truth of the matter is we have failed. We have failed because we have remained divided. We've continued to work as 54 different states that continue to be subjugated. This is why the French continue to have 14 colonies on the African continent. It is why 36 African countries have got American bases and AFRICOM on their soil. It is why many African countries continue to sell their resources, their institutions, for debt to countries like China. And the question that I'm now challenging you, the woke generation, with, is what are we going to do about it? The reason we've got wars on the African continent is because we're being divided for conquest. The reason we've got sanctions on the African continent is that all the independent knowledge and education, the power to take control of our resources, can be destroyed so that Africa can continue to be colonized by our Western colonizers. This is why now we need to rise. Remember that you, the African American, with all your paper money, the greatest wealth among all black nations, only have paper money, but the true wealth is in Africa. The true wealth is the reason why Africa is under sanctions and war, the one that Europeans want to keep for themselves. You need to bring your paper money, your skill, your knowledge, your frustration back to Africa to invest it in the control of real wealth and real resources in the form of the oil, the diamonds, chrome, lithium, cassiterite, and all the other resources that the Western worlds are fighting to control in Africa. Your paper money can be leveraged into machines, skills, technology, and the knowledge that Africa needs in order to move and prosper. You, the Caribbean, with your skill, power, determination. You, the Jamaican, the first people to resist European colonialism. You, the Haitian, the very first black peoples to defeat a European army. You are the answer to Africa's problems. You, the European African, with all that you've learned and earned, the basketball player, the soccer player, the sportsman, the singer, the musician, the actor, with all your billions of dollars, are the investment that Africa needs to stop its dependency on the colonizer. It's about time that we rose. And I'm saying that Marcus Garvey's dream can be fulfilled, because when he dreamt it, not a single country, not a single African country was independent. When he dreamt it, not many black billionaires existed, if any. But today we've got black billionaires. Today the richest man in Africa is a black man. We have what it takes and the capacity that it takes to grow our continent into being a continent that can be respected, can self-determine, control its resources, control the processing of those resources, and create currencies based on those resources to be the leading economy in the world. With that, we can industrialize, grow up the technology curve, and begin to create the machinery, the tools to defend the sovereignty of this continent. And now I say it's time that we unite. We have countries like Zimbabwe under US war sanctions to make it unattractive for any African to come, because Europeans are preserving it for themselves. But I'm inviting you, my African American brother, you Africans in the diaspora, you Africans on the continent, to say, come and take advantage of the greatest reserves of lithium, chrome, gold, true wealth, land, an opportunity to develop infrastructure for us to create wealth as a people, for yourselves, for the advancement of Africa. The time to awake is now, but awakening takes action, pride, investment, development, innovation to give our people power. This is the time.
This is the time. The time is now, right now. And that's what we must do. This is the time. And unfortunately, we don't understand that. And I don't know. You know, we in the Pan-African movement, the sovereigntist movement specifically, you know, we don't have a wide range of brothers and sisters who understand this or are willing to work towards it. You know, most of our people are still believing in that we can affect this system that the Caucasian has created for himself, that we can affect it to the degree that we too, even as a sister was speaking, you know, and she wants to do it within the context of being who we are. And I admire that, you know. I admire that. She ain't saying give up who you are. She's saying be who you are. So I admire that, but... My contention is we've been begging and pleading and praying and marching and demonstrating and sitting in and all of these, the rioting. I apologize, family. And still, to no avail, it falls consistently on deaf ears. And will continue to do so. You know, I'm a strong advocate myself for reparations. You know, not that money is given, but that we repair ourselves, repair who we are as African people, repair our continent. That's why I'm saying reparations is not just the United States. And if, you know, for those of us who understand that really the best place for us to be is on the continent, you know, and for those brothers and sisters who are here, you want to fight for reparations for you. I mean, after all, you might be just like with ADOS and the American descendants of slaves. You know, they're saying, no, this is. For, I mean, I don't really know all of the things that they're asking for. They're just such a turnoff, as far as I'm concerned. You know, because to me, it shouldn't be. There is no divisions. It's just like what is happening in Southern Africa or Zinia with the brothers and sisters talking about, you know, xenophobia. There's no Santa, damn it, phobia. That's people who are outside of us as Africans, if you're fearful of them. Because that's the European. The European suffered from xenophobia. We, of course, were xenophilic. We embraced people. We welcomed people in. They were the ones who suffered from xenophobia. No, and that's not xenophobia that's happening in Southern Africa. It's ignorance. It's stupidity and misdirected. The reason why those brothers and sisters feel that way is because they were not properly educated. They were not properly trained and prepared to take advantage. So here, brothers and sisters from Ghana and Nigeria and Kenya and other parts of Africa. But yet you want to kill them. So, yeah, anyway. Yeah, there's a couple of pieces that I want to play. I know you probably heard there's a cat in Paul. Brother Paul sent me some of this stuff, so I appreciate Brother Paul. You know, he sent me some of this information. I appreciate it. And I'm not sure when this was. He also sent me a piece. He also sent me a piece that deals with same thing that Bill Gates addressed. I don't know if it was a TED talk or not, but saying that we have vaccines that will assist in population control, you know. Here he has his Jacques Itali, and I'm not sure where he's from, but here from a 1981 book by the Bilderbergers. You know, the Bilderbergers, one of those societies, you know, and some of it I can't read because they kind of tried to underline and read and kind of messed the sentence below up, but I'll try my best. But here it says, verbatim. Here from a 1981 book by the Bilderberger, Jacques Attali is an example of the elite's mindset. The future will be about finding a way to reduce population. Of course, we will not be able to execute people or build concentration camps. We get rid of them by making them believe it is for their own good. We will find or cause something, a pandemic, targeting certain people, a real economic crisis or not, a virus affecting the old or the elderly. It doesn't matter. The weak and the fearful will succumb to it. The stupid will believe in it and ask to be treated. We will have planned this treatment, a treatment that will be the solution. The selection of idiots will therefore be done by itself. They will go to the slaughterhouse on their own. Yeah. Yeah. Mind control. Here's one. This is the Health Ranger. And I have some. In fact, I played this from the Health Ranger. Didn't really know who he was at the time. He's a with the wellness. Didn't know he was a Trump supporter. And then next thing I knew, he had all kind of stuff on his website, especially from those who. And he was backing a lie and all of that stuff. He's a big Trump supporter. But he put this out about, and to me, based upon what I understand, you know, what he put out had some validity, you know? And so I want to play, it's not very long, but I want to play this, the gender being made to kill off all black people. And it was about an hour long presentation, but it's only like 10 minutes. So, and I think this is an up-to-date piece. So here we go.
Killing black people, it's five or six different vectors. It's in the food, it's in the vaccines, it's in the medicine, it's in the psychiatric drugs. Oh, and let's get to the food, because this is the final chapter of this that will absolutely shock you. Now, you're hopefully aware of genetic engineering of the food supply, right? They're called GMOs, or genetically modified organisms. This is an advanced science technique to alter the DNA of food crops in order to build in certain traits and physical properties or even chemical properties that the scientists want to put into the food. Now, I'm going to explain to you how your food is now being weaponized as an extermination vector to eliminate black lives. All right? Now, I'm a food scientist. I'm the author of Food Forensics. It achieved the number one best-selling science book on Amazon.com. I'm the co-author of science papers that have been published in mainstream science journals. I'm not just a casual layperson when it comes to food science. I run a mass spec laboratory that's ISO accredited, validated, audited, inspected, passed many, many tests. Our data can be used in a court of law anywhere around the world. We do food analysis. We can search for complex molecules such as pesticides or elements such as mercury or cadmium. So I run the lab. I am the lab science director. I know a thing or two about food science. Now, what they have invented, when I say they, I'm talking about the genetic engineers, not only have they found a way to put these genetically engineered traits into food crops, they've now found a way to cause food crops to grow RNA fragments that can be specifically targeted like bioweapons to interfere with the physiological processes of targeted species that might eat the food. Now, this technology is called RNA interference technology. It's relatively new compared to GMOs, relatively new. It's being touted now as a technology to eliminate the use of pesticides, because what they're saying is they can cause a corn crop to grow RNA fragments that will kill the insects that eat the corn without having to use pesticides like toxic chemicals that overload the insect nervous system and kill it from a nervous system breakdown and so on. This RNA interference technology is a pesticide technology, but it doesn't rely on pesticide chemicals. It relies on RNA fragments in the food. Now, what's disturbing about this is that this technology can be fine-tuned to target a specific race of humans who eat the food. I want you to follow me very carefully on this, because most people have never heard of this before. They've never heard of this technology. They don't know it can be targeted by race. Food crops can be engineered right now based on existing technology to cause infertility in black people alone. That technology is a reality. It's widely covered out there in the mainstream media, in the science media. RNA interference technology is widely covered. And they openly talk about how it can be used to target specific physiological processes of certain insect species. They can interfere with DNA repair or protein synthesis in insects. They can interfere with fertility or reproduction. They can interfere with mobility, a nervous system interaction with the musculoskeletal system, or depending on what animal we're talking about, other systems, endoskeleton systems. I ask you, does that technology exist? The answer is yes. It absolutely exists right now. Are they using that technology? I asked you, do a little bit of research, look at the plummeting sperm production in black men. Sperm production is plummeting in black men. Sperm production is precisely the kind of physiological process that can be targeted by RNA interference technology. Now, is that proof that the food crops are being engineered to cause sperm production to plummet in black men? No, it's not proof. But when you connect the dots of all the other things that are being done covertly, this becomes something very likely in the realm of possibility. It would take a lot of advanced testing to find this out. And guess who controls the funding? Guess who controls nearly all the science funding in America today? The federal government. The same government that allows the CDC to cover up the truth about vaccines and black children. The same government that funds Planned Parenthood abortions of black babies. The same government that covers up the EPA-induced contamination of waterways affecting Native Americans and other populations, including the Flint, Michigan, predominantly black population. This government, same government that runs the FBI, that won Martin Luther King Jr. to commit suicide. It's the same government. The government is at war with you. If you're black and you're watching this, the government is at war with you, and they want you exterminated, and they control the science funding, which means there will never be money for any genetic science of the food supply to uncover this truth. If it were there, it would be covered up like everything else has been covered up this entire time, just like the Tuskegee experiments covered things up in the 1930s. Nothing has changed except the technology is more advanced. The covert technology is more covert. The number of vectors through which they can kill you and cause you to have no children, cause you to have spontaneous abortions, the number of vectors is increasing. You are being targeted. And like I said earlier, to some extent, we're all being targeted. But black people are being targeted more than anyone else. So, what do we do with all this information? What do we do? Do you take to the streets and bash heads? No. It doesn't get you anywhere. The problem is the consolidation of power in the institutions of science and medicine. The problem is that science has been taken over by globalist agendas and depopulation agendas and government funding. The problem is that we don't have a decentralization of science. The problem is, if you will allow me to even invoke this terminology, the problem is that we are all slaves to science tyranny as it is being operated today. We're all slaves. We're living under a science dictatorship that refuses to tell us the truth and yet targets our brothers and sisters, our children, our grandchildren with extermination agendas through medicine, through food, like everything we've talked about. That's the problem. We need independent science. We need decentralization. We need more labs like my lab that I operate independently. We don't take any government money. That's why I can tell you this truth. You think if I were on the payroll of some big corporation that used government money, do you think I could stand here and tell you this truth? No way. Not a chance. It would yank your funding so fast, cover it up, sweep it under the rug. I can only stand here today because I have no financial ties to the system that's murdering all of you. Nor will I ever have financial ties to that system. I refuse to take money from satanic forces. I refuse to take money from murderous regimes. And that's what the United States government is today. It is a murderous regime, and it has been that way under President Obama, President Bush. It's beyond any single president. It has nothing to do with Trump. It's the bureaucracy, the momentum of genocide that is endemic in the culture of the CDC, in the culture of the FDA, in the culture of the EPA, that is beyond the reach of any one candidate or any one politician. And it has persisted for generations, and it continues to persist, and it will continue to target you and murder you and cause you disease and cause you brain damage and cause your children autism until the day comes that we the people decide to stand up and take back our liberty from this murderous regime that commits murder and genocide in the name of science and medicine. And that is what we must do. I don't think it's a goal that can be achieved through violence. And I don't call for violence because that is being inflicted against us in far too many ways. It must start with awareness. And so the only thing I ask of you watching this, listening to this, even if you don't believe every chapter of the talk here, maybe you find some of them hard to believe so far. The only thing I ask of you is share this information. Share this video. Share this talk. Have a public viewing in a church. Maybe you've got a black church somewhere. Invite your congregation to watch this if you dare. If you want to know the truth about this from a scientist, an independent scientist who sees what's happening and refuses to be silent and refuses to be exploited by the evil that exists in our world, the murderous evil in the name of science, stealing life away from black families and black mothers and pursuing a goal of global extermination through medicine and science. We cannot stand for it. We must change our future together. And we're not going to do that, by the way, by fighting with each other over skin color or race. Do not let the system divide us, because the system is actually murdering us, but they're trying to keep us distracted. In the meantime, they want black and white to fight against each other in the streets, don't they? You better believe they do. They want you to not trust each other because they are the murderers. They, the system, they're murdering us all to one extent or another, but they want us to be too busy bashing each other over the head with baseball bats to pay attention to the real murder that's taking place on the bigger scale, the global scale of murder and genocide. Don't allow yourself to be distracted. Do not fall into the depths of racial hate for anyone. Don't hate someone because of their skin color or their background, religion, sexual orientation, anything. Understand that it's we, the people, versus the system of murder and genocide, the scientific dictatorship that has in one way or another targeted us all. So we, the people, must stand together, unified, regardless of our race, unified with the knowledge and awareness that we have a right to live. And we have a right to have families. And we have the right to know the truth.
I agree. We have the right to know the truth. But what is the truth? Remember they said the truth shall set you free. Here's a piece I want to play. Then I get to some callers hanging on the line. The Young Turks. Yank. He, along with his other reporters, they've done some good work. They've brought to fore some interesting stuff. But he's making a comment, very adamant about what happened in Georgia and about what was said about Ahmaud Arbery. And so he's very upset. And, of course, he's on point, as he is sometimes.
Asking us to talk about history, the history of the South. This is in Georgia. What happened in Georgia? There were savages in Georgia. It was the ancestors of the white right-wingers. They were absolute savages. They murdered people. They lynched people. They raped people.
What happened
during these lynches? They enslaved people. They took babies from their mothers and sold them as property. You want to talk about savages? Your ancestors were the biggest savages the world has ever seen.
And
so don't you dare call a black man a savage after you murdered him. Don't you dare do that. I'm so sick of African Americans being called violent when the world's worst violence was done to them, not by them, to them, not by them. For God's sake, you want to do racist stereotypes? If it fit anywhere, and it doesn't, but if it fit anywhere, it would certainly fit white right-wingers in the South, who has hundreds of years of history of being savages. Savages! They snatched babies, and they sold them as property, and they raped their mothers. Savages! That's what they were. You want to talk about stereotypes? Screw all of you who still defend that Confederacy, that monstrosity. Anyone who defends that is a barbaric savage.
That's why they don't want to teach American history in public schools. That's why there's been a strong orchestrated effort to prevent the teaching of anything that you just mentioned right now. You know, children learn about the real savages in this country's history, right? Let's go ahead and dehumanize people over their toenails, but let's also erase the part of our history that, yes, is dark, that's awful, but is the truth.
You know what white right-wingers did in the South? And they did this for hundreds of years. In a lynching, they not only hung the person, they burned the person, and then they cut off their genitalia. And in the midst of doing all this, I swear to God, you could look it up in the history books, they had a picnic around the body. And then they would take home pieces of the charred body for memorabilia. They would have the kids, their kids, go pick pieces of the body off. And then after they did all of that, they had the temerity to call black people violent. No, no more, no more. You don't ever get to call a black person violent. You don't ever get to do that. So if you're a white right-winger in the South, don't cry about, oh no, my beloved ancestors. Your ancestors were not beloved. They weren't. They were monsters. So I said it because it's true. How you react to that is up to you. You can say, hey, that was terrible. They shouldn't have done that.
And they shouldn't, but they did. And they continue to do it. Yeah. The savagery that has been heaped upon us knows no limit. Knows no limit. Thank you, Brother Ralph. Let me get some callers here. Oh, 646-646. Good afternoon. And for those who
are Odios, what's happening?
Hey, I don't know, Jack. I can't clear my throat, man. I got it's been happening to me for the last few days.
You better get you some lozenge, y'all. You may be around some white people that may be invisible at this time or something. But listen, you know, that clip right there is a fact. And the thing is, the white man know it.
Yeah.
The white man know it. Everything that he said is an absolute fact. He can't say one word against what was just said about his no good, filthy, stinking ass.
But that's why,
but, you know,
that's why they don't want or the idea of critical race theory or any critical thinking or any real objective and real history to be taught. You know, they don't want it. Their history is too barbaric. Their history is too evil. Their history is too monstrous to deal, you know, objectively with. You can just take it. You could, and their history from the beginning, because of their environmental evolution of being in that ice box, making them mean-spirited, evil, greedy, and selfish, you know, and even against women. This is their history. This is their evolutionary development. This is what Dr. Sheikh Ansar Jop was talking about when he talked about a two cradle theory of human development.
Right.
You know, this is how they evolved. This is who they are.
Oh, well, they're basically barbaric, uncivilized savages who have no type of decency or anything of that nature. I mean, but, you know, the sad thing is that we as a people sometimes don't act no better, man. I'm hoping, I don't know if you heard this, but you know who Clarence Avant is, right?
Sounds familiar.
Well, he's this all so powerful black man in entertainment. He's like,
yes,
he's like the,
yeah, he's supposed to be the, he's supposed to be the godfather.
Yeah,
and he was a deal maker. Yeah. He was a deal maker. Yeah, he would, yeah, okay, go, yeah, ahead. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Well, last night he had a home invasion, and they killed this 81-year-old wife.
Oh man, okay.
Yeah, it's just the absolute brutality and sickness. But then again, the flip side is, in one of the richest areas in California, in broad daylight, two people robbed a white woman and her two children. And, you know, your boy Tavis Smiley, who I go on record as saying, I think is one of the best interviewers there ever has been, white or black. I mean, the man, to me, is just, he's a hell of an interviewer. He was trying to make the equation that because of the way that society is and the vast disparities between rich and poor, that this may become a common practice.
Oh, really?
I kind of agree with him.
Oh, really? You just coming to that conclusion? Yeah, that's been that way, yeah, period. That's been that way. That has been that. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's about to become, it's about, I believe, it's just my belief.
Uh-huh.
I believe it's about to become more prevalent.
Yeah.
Because of the way that things are structured in this society, the way that things are going economically in this society, I really, really, truly believe, and I can agree with him in this, that danger is lurking out there for a lot of people,
mm-hmm,
because of the economic disparities that we are facing in this country. I mean, people are really, really suffering. And it seems like we live in a society to whereas these greedy individuals don't want to do the right thing.
Right.
Or attempt,
right,
or attempt to, right, do the right thing.
Exactly. Just, you were right. That's what
you,
I'm saying. It's just, it's just been exacerbated by the fact that, right, it continues on. And now the economic condition is so bad that, and the gap between those who have and those who have not is so damn wide. And you know, this is what you're going to constantly see. I agree with you.
No question, because there's too many people in a position that's not able to sustain themselves on the most basic things in life, the most home, having a place to lay your head. You know, it's like I always try to teach mine. The most important thing that you do in life is make sure that you have a place to lay your head. Once you have a secure place to lay your head, then you should be able to do all the other necessary things that you need to do. I always tell mine, the first thing you do whenever you get paid is pay your rent. To make sure that you have a, right, place to lay your head.
There it is.
Or pay your mortgage.
Yep.
Or do whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because once you're in that situation, then you can always move forward.
Right.
Because I tell you, I knocked on wood. I've never been homeless.
Yeah.
And that right there is a beautiful, beautiful thing. Maybe once in life, I was on the verge of homelessness. I don't even think I was really on the verge of homelessness. I just had to move quickly from the place that I was at.
Well, I mean, but you know, there's been times you had to stay with friends for a moment.
No.
You know,
I've only not
her family
lived once in adulthood on my own, and I had to move back home at around, I think, 23 or 24 for like 6 months with my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the last time. And after that, I thank God, you know, you,
yeah,
be in relationships,
yeah,
you live with people and all that. But knock on wood, I've always had my own, and then with ownership, I've never had to face that crisis.
Well, you know,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, but see, I agree with you. I think that priorities for any individual, any person, should always be about how, you know, securing my place to live. That's why when you have a job and you get paid, the number one thing is you pay your rent or you pay your mortgage, and then you look at your utilities. You got all that stuff squared away. Get some food.
And you know. And you know something. Oh, that's exactly how I live.
Right.
I live mortgage, utilities,
mm-hmm.
food,
yeah.
then credit cards. Because I don't like giving credit cards no money whatsoever. I don't even know the last time I paid interest on the credit card. It ain't gonna happen. That's mm-hmm. just not the way it is. But the thing is, we as a people, for some reason, are not coming together the way that we need to be able in the future to sustain ourselves.
Okay, let me tell you, check this out, Jay. Because other people have come here. They came here culturally understanding who they are. They came here
right.
with something tied. They came here with more family value. They came here, you know, knowing that they rely on interest, especially the Asians, but all the others, even the Indians. They came here so they understood that we got to support each other. We got to support ourselves and our families and anything that we have. Now, here in Atlanta, there is an area where Indians have many businesses. They have a strip mall. We don't have a damn, I was going to say we don't have a goddamn strip. We don't. We, you know, they have a strip mall where there's a sit-down restaurant, a takeout restaurant, a supermarket, a furniture store, of course, jewelry store, and clothing stores and so forth, all within there. And even in that area there, because I used to live in that area, but also, too, when I first came here, I had some issues with my shoulder. I had rotator cuff surgery, and I had knee surgery, which is in that area. So I've been there many times, and I've seen it. In fact, I would go by the strip mall. I even ate in the sit-down restaurant, you know, had some Indian food. So I know. But I'm saying, as I'm there, can we not pull our money together that we could do this? Can we provide jobs for our kids and ourselves? Can we spend money with each other and do this? Of course we could. But because we have lost that connection, because we have bought into that we are Americans. And to be an American, American perpetuation promotes individualism, materialism, greed, and violence.
But you know, a thing that these other ethnic groups bring to this country that we don't really have or really don't understand is culture.
Right.
That is one of our biggest problems, is we don't understand what culture is.
See?
We don't understand how culture works.
Okay,
we
now,
don't understand the ramifications of culture. And that's why we in the position that we in.
Well, check this out, Jay.
In a lot of ways,
Jay.
We are cultureless people.
Yeah, Jay, because why? We have bought into a dominant culture.
Individualism.
Right, and we bought into a dominant culture which is alien to us and which yep. ostracized us. They don't want us in it. So we created a subculture. And in that subculture, there's still those elements, not of togetherness, not of closure, but of selfishness, greediness, just like the dominant culture. I got mine. I got to get mine. That's why I had some misgivings about hip-hop and hip-hop culture and the fact of how it was co-opted, especially when it was talking about those unifying factors, when it was talking about how important it was for, you know, for us to be together and so forth. And then they allowed and made it happen to a gangster rap to be put into it and so forth, and which further divided us in the denigration of our women, you know. So no, brother, this is not something that happened naturally. This is by design.
Oh, no question. I agree
with you.
Designed totally to control the people, to manipulate a people, to bastardize a people, to do all of those things. You know, it's really, really, in all truthfulness, it's sad, man.
It is. I agree.
It's a sad commentary as far as our development with being here for as long as we've been here and not being able to foster the necessary tools to gain back our culture, mm-hmm. to create a new culture paradigm to where as our people can collectively sustain one another. Because, listen, every other ethnic group is going to survive the onslaught that's to come. I don't know about us, man.
Well,
I don't know. Well, I don't know about us. Because, see, the white man going to do everything in his power for him to survive or to be in power to survive.
Jay.
But we just keep on thinking about this nonsense called democracy. There is no longer democracy in this country.
But also, too, they got us believing in the theology. So we waiting on Jesus. We believe that whatever you saying, Jay, God going to save us. Jesus going to save us.
Jesus ain't going to do nothing for your black ass.
Jesus going to. Well, listen, Jay, I got to go, man.
Think about it. If we've been going through what we've been going through here for over 500 years, and Jesus say, come save us by now or deal with that cracker by now, it ain't no going to happen.
It ain't going to happen, brother.
You know, but listen, I know you got to go. Look forward to Friday.
Yeah, Friday. Man, Friday, I got your guy on Friday, man. That's right, Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix, will be on with me Friday.
I thought Boogie Woogie Jones' day was Wednesday. But Boogie Woogie coming on Friday.
He's coming on Friday.
I gotta get in touch with Ralph and let Ralph know that Boogie Woogie Jones is gonna be on Friday, so he'll definitely won't miss it. But that should be quite interesting because I see posts all the time from Boogie Woogie Jones.
Yeah.
And he got me tagged in it. So
right on.
Whenever I hit that Facebook page, I see old Boogie Woogie doing the Boogie Woogieism. But listen, man, enjoy the rest of the
you
day,
too.
Yo.
You too. All right, Jay. Peace to you, my brother. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day, family. Peace.